Hello, listeners. Welcome to Film Club episode 16. It is our last for 2012. We started this earlier in the year and we have been through 16 movies. 16 incredibly fantastic in their own right, whether or not they weren't, i.e. Breaking the Waves, but all wonderful films and film choices in their own right. And here we go, closing 2012, looking forward to the next 16 and the next year of films. But before we do that, let me introduce my co-recording partner slash presenter person, Mr. Daniel Serap. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good. It's kind of bittersweet, though, the last episode of 2012.
I know. It kind of, there is a feeling of sadness and a feeling of excitement, because we're doing the last one of these for 2012, and following this, we're doing the last podcast for 2012. So it's a time of sadness, but of jovial celebrations as well. And what better way to celebrate life and the end of 2012 than with a huge Korean sea monster? Our film for this episode is, of course, The Host, or as it's known in its original Korean title. I'm going to have an attempt at this, even though it's going to probably be horrendously pronounced, so I'm going to apologise beforehand. Gwomol, I think, is maybe how you pronounce it, but it is The Host from 2006. It is our latest public pick, coming from Mr. John Land on our Facebook page, over at Facebook, and then obviously, and then you just look for Screen Invasion and find the Film Club forum. So if you want to recommend a film for our viewing in 2013, that is the place you want to be going. You want to do what John did, put down your pick, it will go in the tumbler, and it'll get rattled out lotto style. And that's what happened with The Host, 2006 Korean monster movie, directed and written by Jun Ho Bong. Again, I'm hoping I pronounced that correctly. Probably not. First time I've seen this. What about you, Dan? Is it the first time you've seen The Host?
It's the first time I've seen it, too. I have to admit, like, when you told me that we were going to be doing The Host, you know, a Korean creature feature, I was a little bit apprehensive. But I went into it, and I have to admit, I absolutely loved it. I thought it was so good.
I wish I had that enthusiasm. I liked it. I liked certain bits more than I did others. Other bits I found lagged, and other bits confused me, and it's a bit of a mixed bag. But I mean, the majority, I would say it's about 60% enjoyment, 40%, yeah, that's okay, what's happening?
I think I had some problems with that. I think, first of all, one of the problems with the film is that it's a bit bloated. I mean, it's way too long for a creature feature. And I think, I don't know, like, I just think, if you're going to do this kind of movie, it should always be maybe 90 or 100 minutes. You know, I think if you're a film like Jaws, where you've got a lot of weight behind it and a lot of great story, you can probably get away with a two-hour film. But The Host is like 119 minutes. And I just don't think it really sustains that, I suppose. But I guess looking back on it, I really did enjoy so much about it. Like, regardless of its running length.
All right, well, let's get into that. We'll start with some positives. What did you like about it exactly?
Well, the only familiarity I have with Jun Ho Bong is a film that he did in 2009/2010, which is the film called Mother, and I was so blown away by Mother. It's this kind of, it's almost kind of a thriller about this mother of a mentally challenged boy who is arrested and charged with murder, and she really believes that he's innocent, you know, and he was on, he really knew what he was doing, and so she kind of investigates the case. And it's a film that I was really struck by because it just blended so many elements together so well. It's quite a darkly comic film, but it's also so harrowing, and I think that's what I liked about The Host as well. You know, you have these very diverse elements coming together to make what is actually a really enjoyable film. You know, you have a bit of horror in there, you have this kind of bureaucratic political satire going on, and then you have this kind of dysfunctional family comedy, like, at the core of it. And, like, I have no idea how it blends all these elements together, but I thought it just did it so entertainingly.
See, that's the thing. I mean, there is a lot to it. It's not just a straightforward creature feature. You know, if that's kind of your thing and you just pretty much like straightforward rampage with no real subtext or sort of any context beneath, and you're just looking for a big monster kills everything in sight, humans panic, flee, lots of action. There is that, but there is so much more in it as well. And I do agree, I think 2 hours is maybe a little bit too long. And I also think that it maybe tries to do too much in the sense that it does try and kind of make itself this big monster creature feature. But there's so many things to it, and my interpretation of the film kept changing throughout, like what it was trying to strive for. Like, I have some kind of weird theories about what the whole point of the film is. And again, these are just sort of like weird and wild interpretations that probably and possibly and not even anywhere near correct, but it's just little things that kind of poked out to me. It made me think, what is actually the monster supposed to be representing? Because I get the impression that it's not just a monster for the monster's sake. The monster is actually a representation of something. And at first I thought, it could be a metaphor for environmental decay, like global warming, world conditions. And one of the things that made me think about that is its connection with the water. And there's a scene early on in the film in which, when it first kind of makes its appearance, sort of like as a murky shadow in the water, people start throwing things into the Han River for it to eat. And I was kind of like, if this is what I think it is, and it's kind of some sort of cleverly made indirect reflection of sort of humans' ignorance, you know, they'll just sort of feed a problem without realizing the potential consequences of it, then I thought that was kind of clever. But then, as the film goes on and it starts snatching children, eating and killing grown people, but keeping children alive, I was like, maybe this is actually a metaphor for paedophilia. You know, because it's keeping the kids alive, it's causing widespread panic. And then, I don't know, it's a film that shape and form changes so much, and I was just coming out with these strange ideas. And you say, like you said, you have the sort of dysfunctional family thing, and in a weird way, it's actually a good family film because it shows the family pull together. Oh, it's just weird. Like, I literally don't really know where I stand with The Host. My brain's a little bit scattered with it. I don't know what it is. I mean, it seems like there's almost statements against the US as well, with the whole Agent Yellow thing, and like you said, the political satire, and then there's the idea of, you know, propaganda in the press about health issues. And I was like, these are all great things, but it feels like you're doing too much. It's like, kind of stick to one lane instead of trying to give me 10 different things at once.
I think that's probably one of the problems of The Host as well. You know, I think there is so much going on in there. I get the feeling that Junho Bong really wanted to make this very unique and original creature feature, and he just threw so many ideas at it, and only, I mean, in my opinion, I think about 90% of them stick. I guess for other people that would be different. What the monster represents, I don't know. I kind of see it as this kind of catalyst through which we kind of see, I guess, this kind of nation kind of come into, well, come under a lot of panic, you know. Also, I mean, I did a little bit of research into the film and read a little bit about what Junho Bong was saying about the film. And apparently there was this incident, I think it must have been a few years before The Host, in which a Korean scientist, I think he was working on a US like military base or something, poured formaldehyde into the ocean. And it caused, you know, a lot of panic and a lot of uproar as well, especially towards kind of America and the United States, and the kind of domineering kind of position politically, I suppose. I sort of feel that that's almost what the monster is as well, you know, this kind of creature that is causing so much panic and is kind of pressing down on this kind of nation. I don't, can't really put it into words, but I hope you understand what I mean by that. I think it sort
Absolutely.
of represents kind of South Korean relationship with America, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt, I mean, you cannot watch this film without realizing that there are political undertones at the very least. And I mean, I think it's very, I think any filmmaker that wants to try and make a statement within their film, I'm always going to be behind. And like I said, I like. There isn't a single thing that I dislike about what's being said in the film. I think it's kind of very brave, and it's very brave in the sense to do that within like a monster film, like a creature feature, because that's not usually the preferred method for kind of like political stances or social statements. But I don't know. I just feel like if he'd picked one or two things and kind of stuck to those and kind of written a bit more tighter and a bit more concisely, you would have had something much better, but I don't know.
That's one of the things I actually wrote about the film. I said, and just my notes in front of me, I've got concentrated, question mark. Mm-hmm. I feel like it should maybe have been a little bit more concentrated. Like, I really like the elements with that dysfunctional family.
Yeah.
And then around about the halfway point, that sort of seems to stop. You know, it almost feels like their story kind of ends in a way at the halfway point. You know, the father, we should say, by the way, that there are spoilers in here. Mm-hmm. the father, of course, like, dies. At the hands of the monster, you know, the blonde guy, I can't remember what his name is, he gets kind of taken back to the medical facility, and it almost feels like they're kind of broken up, and I feel like the story kind of comes to an end. And I do wish it kind of was a bit more taut and focused in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because like I said, I mean, in a weird way, in the most unconventional way, it is actually a really interesting family movie. Not that it's something that families, you know, would be sort of incensed to gather around like a Disney film and watch, but it kind of says a lot about, you know, how dysfunction and the sort of disagreements within family structures can obviously often be the thing that pulls a lot of people together, and you kind of see that happen in a fractured way. But yeah, I think if they'd concentrated more on that aspect and then kind of had some of the more sort of political undertones sort of lying underneath, instead of trying to do this really sort of wide-ended spectrum of, oh, it could mean this, it could mean that, because it is very open-ended. And again, I always sort of applaud ambiguity in films, but I don't know, it just feels like it could have been tightened a bit more.
One of my favourite scenes in the film, just speaking of the family, is the scene when they break out of the kind of quarantine hospital.
Yeah.
And they jump into the van and make a getaway. And you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of Little Miss
Sunshine.
Yeah,
exactly. That's what I was thinking of when I saw it. Yeah.
It's like Little Miss Sunshine with sea monsters, which is kind of amazing, really. And that's what I like about the film. Like, you have these elements that shouldn't work, but they're just so entertaining. I mean, I laughed the entire way through that scene. I thought it was hilarious.
There are moments where the film is very funny. Some of them work really well, like that scene in particular. Some of them don't work quite so well. And one of the scenes that I pointed out in my notes is when the little girl gets snatched and they come together for the first time. It's at, like, this memorial service where there's pictures of all the deceased and everyone that's been sort of killed within, like, the first attack of this monster. And it starts off and it's quite somber and, you know, obviously the very sad and the mourning, the disappearance of this little girl. And then it kind of just breaks into almost like a slapstick routine where where they're on the floor, rolling around, like doing rafflecopters almost, like hitting each other. And I'm like, oh man, this is heading into Three Stooges territory. And thankfully it kind of pulls itself back after that, but it was like, that was really weird. And I don't know what to think about that other than, okay, well, that happened. Let's try and move on.
Another scene that really made me laugh was it's just a throwaway moment, but it's when they're standing waiting to cross the road, and the guy has apparently has a virus, and he just spits into the water.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In which a bus comes past and splashes everybody. I mean, it's such a slapstick. Totally, I mean, there's no dramatic purpose in that scene whatsoever.
No.
But it just has these really kind of amusing elements to it, which just blended in so well with so many kind of bleak elements as well. It's not a very uplifting film in many ways.
Oh no, it is. It's very bleak, and especially the way it's filmed. I mean, there's a lot of dark colours used, and there's a lot of dark light settings. Especially around the children, where they're sort of taken away to that strange little sewer canal sort of area. It just seems like the colour palette and the scheme of how the film looks is actually pretty dark. And I think that works within sort of the tone for the majority of the film pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, everything's kind of shot in this kind of chrome, like, mm-hmm. aesthetic, and it works really well for the most part. I mean, I can't really think of any times when there's a lot of colour in the film. You know, I noticed that the kind of athlete, the sister of the main character, she's wearing, like, red for a lot of the film, but it's just so kind of, it's just so bleak, the whole kind of colour scheme, that you don't really notice. And I think, you know, it really does kind of deprive the film of a lot of colour. And I think it really does set the mood so well.
Mm-hmm. It definitely complements what's kind of going on screen with the aesthetic of it. I mean, if it had been sort of more involved with, like, a sort of brighter, more varied colour spectrum, I don't think it would have worked quite so well, because the thing is that the humour in it is often kind of dark humour as well. So even in the film's sort of lighter moments, it's not particularly light. It's not a light, fluffy film at all. You know, it is kind of gruesome, and there are moments where there is actually real tension in the film as well, and I think that works with the general overall aesthetic to the film too. I mean, like I said, I do have issues with the fact that it does seem a little bit bloated. It seems to be throwing far too much at the audience, and although I like the ideas individually, I just don't know if they fit cohesively. But there's plenty that I do like. One thing that I thought was really kind of clever is that it's not really the monster that's actually the ultimate danger to people. It's the people that it comes in contact with. It's like human beings themselves because of the virus. And I thought that was such a little thing, but it actually worked quite well, because here you've got this ferocious thing which, you know, you're expecting people to be terrified of, that's supposed to be doing all this damage. But yet, the majority of damage is actually done by people themselves. And that's kind of what made me think it ties into maybe a sort of statement on sort of environmental decay.
Yeah, I mean, it's a kind of a cliched idea. We've seen it done before in things like, I mean, recently it was done like in The Mist, like the Frank Darabont movie. It was done in Sunshine. But I think it's just done really well here, and I think it is because it has this kind of element of satire about it, you know? I think that's what makes that element about, you know, it's not, the monster isn't just, you know, the creature in the film. It's also, you know, the ineptitude and the kind of the government that are just like uncaring about these people. And yeah, I think this like the satirical elements under the surface is what really makes that quite unique, and it works really well because of that.
Well, it's interesting, because when I first sort of when this first came in as our next pick, I was like, why is it called The Host? Like, literally, on the surface, the name makes no sense, but as you get into the film, it really does, because I mean, it kind of makes for this sort of almost metaphorically invisible bacteria, you know, this sort of sense of paranoia and panic that starts. And it's weird, because even though it kind of comes to light that the virus isn't exactly what everyone thinks it is, it's kind of caused this almost mental sort of pandemic, you know, where this monster's triggered off all this panic and all this kind of uprising and craziness, and I think that was actually really kind of, it's a very simple, subtle thing, but it kind of it worked really well, and the name actually makes a whole lot of sense when you've seen the film.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's something I thought about too. I mean, speaking of the monster, I was thinking about this. Do you think that there's any kind of problem with the fact that they show the monster so early on? Because I mean, Steven Spielberg like always said about like Jaws that the best decision he made was taking his editor's advice in not showing the shark for more than like a few seconds. And that's something that has caught on with most kind of creature features. You think of things like Cloverfield, and I guess to a lesser extent like Super 8. And like this is kind of a strange thing in Host, because you see it literally within the
From the
first
start,
5 minutes of the film. Like, I don't know if, do you think that kind of breaks the tension at all?
No, not at all. I mean, I think, in fact, I think it's actually served itself better for showing the monster more, because there is this sort of almost unspoken rule of don't show the monster or show it as little as possible. I mean, it works fantastically. You mentioned some great examples there. Like, another one that I can think of off the top of my head is Monsters, the film that came out a couple of years ago, where
Yeah.
literally you don't see the actual monsters in question until like the last sequence, essentially. But I actually think it worked a lot better in this sense, because I think it ties to some of the more satirical points that the film makes, and the idea that it's sort of commenting on hysteria. You know, you again, literally, you could see the monster as this variable of different reflections. Like, it could literally be a physical manifestation for the press, for the paranoia within the news. You know, it's literally like they will just shove panic tactics onto the TV, etc., and just literally put it straight into people's homes. You see this thing literally just rampaging through Korea, breaking things. And I think the actual fact that you see it pretty much from the start, and it has such a sort of physically domineering sort of presence, actually works massively in its favour.
Yeah, I think so too, actually. I'm glad you agree with me on that. Like I said before, I think the monster, more than anything else, is this kind of symbol. Well, not really a symbol, but more of a catalyst for paranoia. And I do think the fact that it shows the monster means that, you know, it's not got this kind of serious connotation. You know, it's not just like a monster causing havoc. I think the fact that you see it and you just put it out there, it allows you to kind of see more of the reflections that the monster kind of symbolizes. opposed to, you know, it, like I said, just being this kind of Godzilla thing that's causing rampage, and, you know, it prevents it from just being your typical creature feature, and I think it allows you to kind of get past that straight away and think more about what the host is doing under the surface, which is a lot more interesting than being your average creature feature horror film.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a wonderful scene early on in, like, its first sort of attack in which it quite literally traps a bunch of people in what I think is like a shipping container, and literally they're trapped in there with it, and you know it's in there, you've seen it go in there, you can see people desperately trying to escape, and I was like, oh my god, this is actually pretty amazing. Like, one, it looks fantastic from a sort of physical, sort of jolted perspective, but also, you know, it kind of ties in really to some of the ideas. So yeah, I mean, I like that scene. One scene, what am I on about one scene? One thing that I also thought was quite interesting is the fact that the monster picks specifically children and keeps them alive. Now, I said earlier on, when I first saw this, I thought, maybe this is some kind of commentary on paedophilia, but then I was like, I started thinking less sinister, I started thinking less dark, and a little bit more optimistic in a way. And I kind of thought maybe it's to do with the loss of innocence and growing old, because you have this family dynamic where the girl's father is essentially kind of like a man-child, you know, like his brother has been to university, his sister is like this sort of award-winning archer, his father has his own business, he's kind of almost like the black sheep of the family, he's the one that is always sleeping, kind of just drinking, getting his kid to drink beer, saving dimes for a new phone, you know, he really hasn't got an awful lot, and it's almost like he's in a sense of arrested development, and it's In a weird way, it kind of made me think that the fact that the monster's taken his child is almost like it's kind of a sort of waking point for him to realise that, you know, his sort of childhood demeanour or childish behaviour kind of is coming to an end, and it's almost like a maturing point for him in a sort of metaphysical, metaphorical sense.
Yeah, well, I mean, I said before about, you know, it just really kind of, this kind of adventure to get the girl back is a way that the family comes together. But I think more than anything else, it's kind of a way of him kind of finding his almost kind of like fatherhood role. You know, he, like you said, he is this kind of man-child in a way. You know, someone who's never really had any responsibility. And all he really does is sleep on the job. And, you know, like you said, he gives his daughter beer and he's irresponsible. And I think, you know, when that girl does get kidnapped, I think that's when he sort of realises to kind of, he needs to take his role seriously.
Exactly.
Yeah.
To kind of coin a very cliched phrase, you don't know what you've got until it's gone, and then that's essentially,
exactly, yeah,
essentially what happens to him, I guess, in the movie. Yeah, I think it's a really good film, and for the majority of it, I still don't know kind of where exactly my brain stands with it. There's so many things I like about it, and in general, there isn't anything that I particularly dislike. I like all of the separate bits as individual bits, but it's just coming together, it feels a little clunky and a little too much and a little bit too bloated. Had it been cut down, like we said, to about, you know, 90 minutes, 100 minutes, I think it would have been better. I think there's a much better, tighter, conciser film in there somewhere. It's just kind of got a little bit of extra padding.
Yeah, I think, I mean, what Jun Ho Bong really does with movies, he just takes so many different ingredients from, like, all over the place, just shoves them in a bag, like, shakes it up and throws it. And, like, and basically some of it works. Like, some of it all kind of sticks together and it works. But, like, there are elements which just make it so bloated. And I do think it could have been better with a bit more concentration and focus. But for the most part, I enjoyed the fact that it did take such a risk in matching all these weird elements together. And I thought, doing so, it was a very entertaining film.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it works on the level of it being a creature feature, which are always a guilty pleasure, and it works on the level that it's more than that. So, you know, you can find all sorts within the film. Just perhaps maybe just too much to find, I don't know. So there you go, that's The Host, recommended by Mr. John Land over on our Film Club forum over at Screen Invasion's Facebook page. So if you want to suggest a film to go into our public pick and have us witter on about it and all of its inner workings, then that's the place you need to go to, or you can send us an email at filmclub@gmx.com. But now, it's time to go on and see what is going to be our next film and our first film for 2013. Now, you had the challenge of setting our very first film as it was, and that was a bar that you had to put quite significantly high, and you did so with Alien, and that was a wonderful choice. I am interested in seeing how you take the bar and where you put it for our first film in 2013.
Oh god, I didn't realise this.
Well, it wasn't. It wasn't until about 2 minutes ago when I decided to lay it all. So, what we got? What have we got for 2013 to kick us off?
Well, basically, in picking this week's choice of film club, I look back at what I'd already chose for the show, and I realised something that kind of depressed me in a way, that I hadn't really chose a very modern film. I think the most modern film that I'd chosen for film club was maybe Punch Drunk Love, which is a few years old now. I mean, my choices, like you said before, one of them included Alien. You know, I've chosen The Bicycle Thieves for film club. I hadn't done something from the last few years, and I think that, you know, we're coming to the end of a year when some critics and people have written that film is dying or is dead and it's not the same as it used to be. And I don't buy into the idea, you know, that they don't make them like they used to or anything like that. I still think that cinema and film is going as strong as it ever has done. It's changed, sure, but I think it's still as strong and important an art form as it ever has been. So I want to choose a film from the last few years, and I think this is probably my favourite film from the last few years. I also think, you know, considering the fact that some people have said that cinema's dying, I wanted to choose a film that reflected, you know, young people, and it's a young story with a cast entirely made up of young people. So yeah, the film that I've chose, kicking off 2013, is David Fincher's The Social Network.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, basically, for those of you that aren't aware of The Social Network, it's the story of the creation of Facebook. It's the story of Mark Zuckerberg, who made the website while he was at Harvard University with his best friend. And the film kind of tracks the friendship between the two of them as it takes off, and the kind of downfall between Mark and his friend Eduardo, as, you know, they run into legal difficulties, the kind of ambitions sort of tear them apart. And I really like this film because it's, like I said, it's a very young film. It's a film that deals with young issues, and it deals with the internet and, you know, social media. But at the same time, it's a film made up of entirely young characters. You know, these are the characters in this film are the only ones that really understand the enormity of what they're doing. You know, a lot of the older characters in the film are represented as people who are kind of ignorant to kind of the digital age and don't really understand this kind of young generation. I think it's just a really interesting film to read into. It's directed by David Fincher, of course, who's one of the best filmmakers working today, written by Aaron Sorkin, who's fantastic. So, yeah, I think it's a very enjoyable film. I think there's a lot that we could get out of it on Film Club, too.
Absolutely. What a wonderful pick. And I wasn't expecting that in the slightest. That was a very sort of left-field term, but I really like that. Because, you know, like you said, it has a real sort of modern appeal to it. As you say, it deals with young people in a sort of young time, in a modern sort of contemporary time. But there's also this wonderful sort of interweaving feel of the global inspiration of youth within the film as well. And almost like the cracks of disappointment that go with it as well. Man, I'm excited because I haven't seen Social Network for a little while, so I'm excited to get back into that, and I think there is plenty of cinematic juice to be squeezed from that particular fruit, so excellent pick.
Thank you, yeah, I'm sure you'll be able to find it. I mean, it's available in most stores. I'm not quite sure if it's available to stream on Netflix, but it'll definitely be available to rent through Netflix and Love Film, through iTunes, so yeah, please go out and find it, and join us in our discussion about it on the Facebook forum, on Twitter, at Invasion Radio.
That's right. Yeah, you always remembering the Twitter there. excellent. Yeah, you should be able to find it on streaming, I'm sure. You'll be able to find it easy peasy.
Yeah, it's what, like almost three years old now, so I mean, I'm sure it'll be somewhere to find.
And for those who haven't seen it and are thinking, you know, because when it first initially came out, I was a little bit like, as much as I love David Fincher, I was like, I don't know if I really want to see a film about Facebook. And to be honest, that only makes up for a very small fraction of it, to be honest, because there's so much more into it. And it's very much about the relationships between the people that started it and how they began to evolve and then disintegrate and all the things sort of sandwiched in between. So if you kind of still haven't seen it and you've been thinking, well, I don't want to watch a film about Facebook, It's not really that much about Facebook.
I mean, I guess this is kind of a youthful digital age story, but it's not entirely. I think one of the elements that makes it work is that it's so timeless. So yeah, don't just write off, it's this kind of internet Facebook movie. There is a lot more to it that I'm sure you'll enjoy if you haven't seen already.
Exactly. So there you go. What a wonderful pick. I'm actually looking forward to that a lot. Yeah, awesome. So there you go. Go find yourself a copy, like Dan says, and then go watch it, and then get in touch with us, like he said, at Film Club Facebook Forum at Facebook. Strangely enough, ironically.
Oh, we should get some kind of endorsement for
I
this.
know, right? Surely Zuckerberg could kick us back a few pesos for that. Or you can use the Twitter account at Invasion Radio as well, and we'd love to hear from you. But that's it. I mean, I think we'll be back in what, 4 weeks? Because
Yeah, that's
we usually
that.
do this every 2 weeks, so we'll give some time to go watch that. And obviously, this time of year is obviously very busy for us who indulge in films, because we're trying to fit in as many as we can before the end of year and what have you. So let's say 4 weeks, and then we'll have got a good bit of the new year under our belts and ready to kick things off again. There you go. Have a good Christmas, everybody, or a good holiday, or whatever you're celebrating, and a wonderful new year. And we will see you for a whole new calendar year's worth of movie watching in 2013.
Happy holidays!